Welcome to episode 111 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for Saturday, September 27th, 2008. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Fredcast. I know I didn't give you a Fredcast on Friday from the show. I apologize for that, but I've got a ton of interviews from Interbike. Now that I'm back home, I've had a chance to get a little bit of rest and sort of get my wits back about me. The last week has just been amazing. Interbike was a lot of fun, very interesting, and a lot of hard work. I hope you've enjoyed everything that I've put together. What follows will be interviews from days 2 and 3 of this year's 2008 Interbike Expo. I hope that in the meantime you've enjoyed hearing the full press conference from Lance Armstrong, including sort of the fireworks between him and Greg LeMond, and then getting to hear directly from Greg LeMond when I had the chance to interview him exclusively with just two other journalists. So I hope you've enjoyed that. And for those of you who were able to come out to the Mobile Social on Thursday night at the USA Crit Finals, it was great meeting you. We'll be doing that again, so pay attention. I will have more announcements in the future of future Mobile Socials. In the meantime, here are the last interviews from days 2 and 3 of this year's Interbike. Enjoy the interviews, but most of all, enjoy the ride. Now, before we get to all of those interviews that I did at Interbike, I want to remind you that this episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Go to www.audiblepodcast.com/cycling, and just because you're a listener of the Fredcast, you will get a free Audible audio book. And now Audible has over 50,000 titles, everything imaginable. And you know, having worked an entire week, both at my day job and at the Fredcast at Interbike, you know, it's time to just sit back with a good book and relax. And if I was going to recommend an Audible book to you this week, the one that I think I'm going to be reading, it's 3 Cups of Tea by Greg Mortensen and David Oliver Rellin. Let me tell you about this. First of all, it's on Audible, it's unabridged, it's narrated by Patrick Lawler, and this is an incredible story of a man who, after a failed attempt to ascend K2 at the top of the world in the Himalayas, he came down just a shattered person and was nursed back to health by the tribal leaders and the tribe in this village in Pakistan. And when he started to get more healthy, he looked around and he was amazed at what served as a school in the community and as a way of thanking those folks who helped him get his strength back. He vowed to help them build a school. It's an incredible story of one man who went beyond politics, beyond extremism, beyond religion, simply to help other human beings better themselves, as a way of thanking them for what they did for him. It's an incredible story. It's turned into just a real victory in that part of the world and something that I really recommend to you. It's 3 Cups of Tea. It's by Greg Mortensen. If that doesn't sound interesting, there's 50,000 plus other titles on Audible. Once again, go to audiblepodcast.com/cycling for your free book. Check it out. I know that you will enjoy it. And we thank Audible for their sponsorship of the Fredcast. One of the big trends this year at Interbike is saving gas, green technology, commuting, and I'm with Chris Deo. He's from Ultra Motor. How is your product addressing every single one of those issues?
Sure. Well, what we hear from people is they want to get around town, they want to run errands, they want to get to and from work more easily. They're sick and tired of putting expensive gasoline in their car. Traffic congestion is getting more of a problem, and parking is an incredibly difficult situation. So we've introduced the A to B, which is designed from the ground up as a commute vehicle. It has a lithium-ion battery pack in it. It's 500-watt motor. You can go up to 20 miles per hour on the bike. It has elements of a mountain bike and elements of a scooter in one package that's really designed for the urban commute.
So you've described your product as a vehicle. Now, I look at it, and I see pedals, I see gears, I see disc brakes. It looks like a bicycle to me. Why do you call it a vehicle?
Sure. Well, it actually does have elements of a bike, absolutely. But when you think about a bike, a lot of times people think of a bike purely as a recreational vehicle, so to speak. And this product is really about getting to and from, you know, literally point A to point B, thus the name. So we think of it more as a vehicle because what it's going to enable you to do is do things that you can do on a bike, but also do things that a bike may be a little bit limiting. So, for example, we talk to consumers about wanting to use a vehicle to get to work, but a bike presents some challenges because they don't want to show up at work all sweaty after having ridden 3 or 4 miles or 5 miles on a bike. This vehicle enables you to get to work without the sweat factor.
Okay, so let's talk about some specifics here. Obviously, we're talking and I'm recording this audio. Give people an idea of what this product looks like and how it's been designed.
Sure. So it's been designed from the ground up, like I mentioned, as an urban vehicle. So it has 20-inch wheels, so smaller wheels than a traditional bike. The width of the wheels are 3 inches, which is much wider than a traditional bike. So in a sense, the wheels look almost more like a scooter or a motorcycle. The frame itself is hydroformed aluminum, so it has kind of a very nice, sleek, Euro design look to it, kind of a minimalist approach.
It actually reminds me of some of the original monocoque mountain bikes when I look at it, so that people can get an idea of what that looks like.
Okay, terrific. It has other elements, though, that look very much like a bike. You know, it has front and rear suspension. It has front and rear disc brakes. It has a rear derailleur. I mean, all the things that you would normally see on a bike, but it's just, it has a different flair to it, if you will.
You're also telling me a little bit about the seat and the pedal position and the handlebars. Talk to me about that.
Sure. So in order to make it a comfortable commute, it's really more about the sitting position rather than about the highly efficient position of your body on the pedals. So we put an oversized seat on the bike. We raised the height of the handlebars just a little bit, and we also moved the pedals forward a couple of inches. So what it does is it sort of forces your body into more of an upright position, more like a cruiser bike rather than a road bike.
Now, somebody buys one of these, they plug it in to charge it. Let's talk about the batteries that are in it, how long they last, how fast the bike will go, and for how long.
Sure. So as I mentioned, it's a lithium-ion battery. So it's the same kind of battery that you have in your laptop or your cell phone or something like that. So the bike comes with a charger, again, just like your laptop. You plug it into any 110-volt outlet in your house or your garage or your office. And it'll recharge in 3 to 4 hours, and you're ready to go. The range on it is roughly 20 miles, depending upon your weight and the kind of terrain and so forth. And one of the interesting things is we also offer a secondary battery. So for those that are concerned about distance, you can put a secondary battery on the back of the bike and double that range to 40 miles.
How fast will it go?
It'll go 20 miles an hour with the motor alone. One of the questions I always get is, well, how about downhill? And the answer is that, we haven't yet learned how to defy the laws of gravity. So if you're going downhill, you can go pretty much as fast as the bike will take you.
Now, why 20 miles an hour? Was there a specific limit that you were trying to keep it under?
Sure. So basically, the Department of Transportation that governs motorized vehicles, if you will, has a rule that says if a vehicle goes 20 miles an hour or less and has a certain engines or motor size, then it does not have to be registered with the Department of Motor Vehicles. You don't have to get a separate license and registration and insurance policy. Instead, it can be classified according to those rules as a bicycle. And so we specifically designed the product to fit within those constraints.
But still, it's got a 500-watt motor, so it's going to go when you need it to. It's going to do what you need. And of course, if somebody is worried that someday they're going to run out of juice, it's got pedals. They can still pedal like a normal bicycle.
Absolutely. In fact, one of the things that people are always surprised about is they look at it and they think, well, okay, maybe it's okay with the motor, but how's it going to be when I pedal? And whenever we have people test ride it, they come back afterwards, and almost to a person, they always say, wow, it really pedaled easily too. And they're always surprised by that.
How much does it cost?
This product will retail for about $2,700.
And where will people be able to find them? I mean, I noticed you're talking to a lot of bicycle dealers here. What's your plan as far as getting it out to the end user?
Sure. So you'll be able to find this in your local bike dealers, you know, certain authorized dealers around the country. We'll also be offering it through some motorsports dealers as well, folks that are currently selling scooters and small motorcycles and so forth. And what I would suggest is people go to our website, and we have a dealer locator there. So you can just click on, you know, what state you're in, and you can find a dealer located near you.
Great. Okay, where's that website?
www.ultramotor.com.
Excellent. Thanks so much. It's a great product. Good luck.
Thanks very much.
How many times have you ridden home and forgot your bike was on top of your car? Don't you wish you had, oh, I don't know, an extra eye? Ed, tell me about your product.
Well, I haven't done it, but my girlfriend's done it like 5 times in a row, day after day. And at the show, at the Interbike show, we have found out the most incredible thing is everybody's done it more than once. Every story we have heard, it's been done 2 times and like in the last month. That's what's so crazy about it.
So my wife doesn't like me telling the story, but she drove into the garage of our apartment years and years ago with both of our mountain bikes on top, came home looking rather sheepish. How does your product keep people from driving into the garage with something on the roof rack?
It's got a sensor similar to a normal upper-end car, but it's wireless. So you put it on your rack, and then you put an alarm into your cigarette lighter. Okay, so it's very, very, very easy to use. People have come up with a lot of devices. We know people that put garbage cans in front of their garages and different things, but when you get used to seeing the same thing over and over again, it just doesn't work. You need an alarm system. You need something that's going to beep and alarm you, and that's what we figured out here.
So is this something that I leave on my roof rack all the time, or how does it work?
You can leave it on your roof rack, or you can just clip it off very simply and put it inside your car when you're not using it. It's completely waterproof. It's really durable. It's going to be simple to use. You're not going to have to remember to do anything. It's going to turn itself on and off, which it does, on your rack.
So how does it know my bike's up there?
No, it doesn't know your bike's up there. It knows when you move. So if you're not moving, it's off. Second you move, it comes on to save battery life. Well, it's pretty simple.
How much does such a product cost?
$299 retail. And we're the average nice wheels, $500. We have had several people come in here. We're going to give a contest away to the best story. I think Duval, the professional water ski, might be winning it because he's up to $60,000. He spent that much on car, rack, bikes, and mostly his house, $60,000 in one incident. A lot of people think because they don't have a garage, they don't need it, but we're hearing tons and tons of people running into ATMs, low overhead parking garages, your burger joint with the low overhang. So it's been needed for a long, long time. I have 20 patents. I started my company 25 years ago with 100 employees, 58,000 square feet, all made right here in Logan, Utah, the USA. And usually when I need something and I can't find it, I'll end up making it. And there's a huge need for this. It's going to be great. It's going to save the insurance companies a lot of money.
So the product's called the Extra Eye. Where can people get more information?
We debuted it here yesterday. It's so brand new, but I will guarantee you, you will see it in REI and Performance Bike and across the board. More information will be available on www.ekusa.com. You can look up www.extraeye.com, and there's more to come, but it's going to be an awesome product, and it's been greatly needed for a long time.
Great. I know it's gotten a lot of buzz here at the show. Ed, good luck. Nice to meet you.
Thank you very much.
I'm in the Cat Eye booth. I'm talking to Ellen Hall, and besides being an award winner from the Outdoor Industry Women's Coalition, we're looking at a new website, worldcommute.com. And Ellen, tell me, what's really the idea behind this website?
The idea of the website is to have a really useful tool to track and record human-powered commute miles, whether it's cycling, walking, skating, you name it, just to record and gather some information about people's participation and how much money they're saving on gasoline, how many gallons of gasoline they're saving, some carbon offset info, and some health points. And then from that, we're hoping that we can create some fun competitions between different companies and organizations to challenge each other to be a little bit more proactive about human-powered commuting.
So sort of taking social networking and environmental consciousness and money saving and putting them all together on one website.
Yes, exactly, exactly. We're really excited about it because there's so many different angles we can work with. We can work with the health issue, you know, people wanting to stay a little bit more healthy and get into fitness activities if they aren't already, or to just kind of expand on what they're already doing. And then you've also have the environmental aspect of people wanting to get more involved with, you know, just kind of their daily lives and what they can do to kind of decrease their impact, as well as, you know, just the financial aspect, the gas, you know, the gas savings in dollars, the wear and tear on their vehicle. So we've got a bunch of fun different angles we can kind of work with and try to reach out to a lot of different groups that way.
So tell me briefly how the website works.
Okay, on the website, you create a profile for yourself, and then you can log each commute that you do each day, whether it's to and from the office, to and from school, running some errands, health and fitness type activities. And then based on those commutes that you enter, you'll be given information on your carbon offset information, your money savings, gas savings, the total miles you've traveled, so a variety of different things. And all of those numbers will also go into our world database, where we'll have the totals for everyone who's participating in the world.
So I tell you that I've got a 30-mile commute to work, and I drive a certain kind of car, and I live in a particular neighborhood. The website's going to compute for me what I'm saving, dollars, gallons, and carbon, and be able to compare that to friends, co-workers. Tell me about that.
Yeah, we're really excited about the group feature to kind of create some, you know, friendly competitions and challenges. Also, so you can kind of just improve on your own and kind of see your impact and hopefully increase that with your human-powered commutes. We're really excited to try to get some cycling retailers on board to really help reach out to their consumers and kind of strengthen those relationships. Also really excited to try to do some work with schools to help get young, you know, elementary age children involved with these kind of healthy lifestyle activities at an early age and get those patterns really developed and hopefully share them with their family and friends and really get people involved with using human power as a means of transportation.
So speaking of sharing, we were talking a little bit about social networking. What sort of plans do you have to integrate with some of the other social networking sites that are out there to really give this a real broad reach?
Yeah, absolutely. We're really excited to create some applications for some of the, you know, popular social networks. And we've been looking into, you know, Facebook, of course, which is the popular U.S. one, as well as a handful of foreign sites as well, because this is, you know, a global site and will be available in a total of 7 languages. So we're really excited about that and hoping that that'll help spread the word to a much wider audience, because, as we all know, it's the social networking scene is kind of spreading like wildfire and just reaching, you know, phenomenal amounts of people.
So people are now probably confused, because the first thing I said was that we're at the Cat Eye booth. How does Cat Eye get involved in putting a project like this together?
So about a year ago, before Interbike last year, we kind of decided that we really needed to challenge the industry, the cycling industry, to do their part and to lead by example, to, you know, to really step up their efforts with bike commuting and to, you know, make it obvious, you know, so that your neighbors see you going out each morning and they're like, oh, maybe I can do that. But once we thought about it, you know, everybody in the cycling industry typically owns at least one bike and is familiar with what to do to commute, you know, what clothes to wear, how to pick a safe route, that type of thing. So we kind of wanted to reach a much broader audience, those people that maybe are kind of new to it, that, you know, the cost of gas is kind of making them think about other options. People that, you know, might not have grown up working in bike shops and in the industry, and try to reach, you know, just a really wide variety of people. We've also built a resource library into the site that will hopefully be really helpful to, you know, to everybody, to, you know, show different resources as far as, you know, tips about, you know, what to commuting tips for commuting in the spring versus commuting in the winter. We've got some fun, like, excuse busters for the people that, you know, are kind of on the fence about it. And they're like, well, you know, I work in an office environment. I have to look nice. And then, you know, kind of busting that excuse and saying, hey, you can still be involved. You can drive your car one day a week and drop clothes off. Or, you know, just some different options and resources to really help people at any stage of the game with regards to their specific, you know, commute needs.
I thought it was interesting. You were also telling me about your company philosophy. Tell me how that hooks into the website.
Okay, so CatEye, you know, kind of like corporate ideals, you know, talk about health, safety, and the environment. And up until kind of recently, we were addressing safety with regards to, you know, all the lighting products. But as far as health and the environment, we weren't really stepping up to the plate that much. And with, you know, with the site launching, we're all a bit more aware of that. We know we're in the, you know, kind of in the public eye to step up to the plate with as far as our impact on the environment and, you know, just kind of helping promote people have more healthy lifestyle.
It's a great project. Good luck with it. And thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks so much. It was great.
I'm in the Schwalbe booth. I'm talking to Celeste Moser. Celeste is the managing director of Schwalbe North America.
Or directrice, if you can say it in French.
That works too. And we're talking about tires. And first, we have to talk about the name. Because I've heard people screw up this name more times than almost any other name in the industry. Help us with it.
Yeah, it's a good one. Okay, so there's Schwabel and Schwabbly and Schwab and many variations in the theme. But it's really Schwalbe if you want the German or Schwalbe if you want the American version. And it means in German, the bird swallow, you know, those ones you see on the golf course. And thus the logo for Schwalbe in the shape of the bird.
So let's talk a little bit about the brand. You mentioned something to me that I was a bit surprised at, and some of the listeners might be surprised at, the size of the brand as compared to the other folks here in the room.
Yeah, it's actually the largest line in the entire industry. We have over 2,000 items, and we vary through all the cultures that are present in the cycling world, from BMX, recumbent, commuter, touring, trekking, urban mountain, and city, balloon bike, road racing, high-end road racing, mountain, cyclocross, pretty much everything you can think of we've got.
And I asked earlier, I mean, even 29ers and 650Bs.
29ers and 650Bs, yeah, and the Racing Ralph, Furious Fred, and the Alberts.
See, I was baiting her to see, have her make sure she said Furious Fred there, so that was good. Let's talk about your road tires.
Furiously fast.
There you go. Just not like me. So let's talk a little bit about your road tires. What's new for 2008 in your high-end road?
Well,
excuse me, 2009.
I was going to say, we're in 2009 now, and the Ultremo is still the high-end tire. It's the tire that's being used by our pro teams, Team Colombia this year and Gerolsteiner this year, and next year we have Team Colombia and Liquigas with Cannondale. We're partnering. The Ultremo was revamped a bit so that we have the Ultremo R, which is the highest-end clincher, a racing clincher. It has elements that we've been working on for a few years now, technology in radial performance. It's the first radial bicycle tire in the world, meaning the weave that we have on our puncture protection belt is patented by Warwick Mills that we're partnering with, and it allows us to lay that belt in on a 90-degree angle straight over the center tread. It reduces rolling resistance and increases speed. And with our rubber compound, it's a triple rubber compound, that we've nanoed, that's a popular word right now, it's taking the actual polymers from the rubber and reducing them to nanoparticles so that you have much more, you have a better contact patch, and again, it has to do with rolling resistance, rolls faster. For those who are a little skittish on the road and need something not safer but a bit more protection, we have the DD, which allows us to put the snakeskin sidewall into that sidewall for extra protection cuts.
Question about the radial, because we've seen radial tires on cars forever. Why haven't we seen it on bike tires?
It's just been a matter of actual construction, being able to lay the carcass and the puncture protection and the tread in the same direction, which hasn't been possible because of that protection belt. And now that we have that ability, and primarily because of that weave of the Vectrin fibers, that allows that radial technology.
What about weight? How does it compare to some of the other tires that are out there?
You're looking at 185, which is probably one of the lightest. If you pick it up, you're almost afraid to put it on the bike because you can't believe it's going to last. But they're quite durable, and they perform really well in heat and in wet. Super fast. It's what the teams, as I said, are using. Most of the pro teams that we have, domestic pro teams, are also on those tires.
All right, let's move to mountain. Tell me what's new in your mountain bike tires.
Mountain bike, we have the 650B, which is showing a little bit of a resurgence. We've got a lot of wheel makers out there who are producing wheel sets, rims for that size, and bike manufacturers as well. So we're along on board with them, and we made the Racing Ralph in that size. It's a nice size, what they're saying too, is for female riders. A little bit bigger than that 559, allows a little bit more distance per revolution. And with the Racing Ralph, it's a win-win. That's our best cross-country tire that we have. In the downhill, we have some Big Bettys, Muddy Marys, and yes, all the names are really funny. But those are also taking the world by storm, especially in Canada, where we have some downhill teams that are on those tires and doing a great job.
Where do the names come from?
We have a running joke in the house that the Germans are sitting around drinking beer every Friday night, getting a little tipsy, and spreading out the names. A couple of them are actually company names that we laugh at, like Dirty Doris and Fat Frank, especially when Frank is nothing but skinny.
And Doris?
And Doris. Now, Doris, no comment.
2,000 different products. All tires?
Yeah. Tires, tubes, rim strips, rim tape, a few accessories. Those aren't necessarily included in that 2,000 as they're considered supplemental to the line. But we do valve extenders, tire levers, some of those things. We do a great business in tubes now. Our tubes are the best in the industry. I can say that simply because I've ridden almost every other tube in the industry.
What makes them so great?
100% high-grade butyl rubber, seamless, removable valve cores. And we actually set the valve ourselves. It's hand set. When we're in full production, which is about 70,000 to 80,000 tubes a day, we take a percentage value of what's produced, and we actually quality control check four times before they're boxed, meaning they're inflated, hung for 24 hours, put in water, cleaned, rolled, wrapped, stuck in the box to make sure that they're okay to go. So it's a tube that is elastic and holds the air longer than any other tube that I'm aware of on the market.
There was one thing that you had to say about Schwalbe that makes it stand out among its competition. What would that one thing be?
Quality and diversified. I mean, it's a one-stop shopping for dealers, and it's everything a consumer can want. So many varieties, but primarily you're looking at a really high-quality product. We do our best to always maintain that. We will never compromise that. And we try to provide the best customer service we can so that we keep loyal and happy customers.
Well said. Where can people get more information?
You can go to our website, which is www.schwalbetires.com. All the information is there. All the product is there. You can buy direct from the site. It lists all the dealers that we deal with and distributors as well.
Great. Celeste, thanks so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
One of the things I find when I walk around the show at Interbike every year, there's more bar companies, more drink companies, more gel companies, but there's this one company that's been here every year, and that's Hammer Nutrition, and I'm with Brian. Brian, what makes you different from these other brands that I find in my supermarket and the pharmacies? What makes Hammer different? Why have you been here so long?
Oh, thank you for stumping me with the first question, David. And thank you for having me on your podcast. What sets us apart, I would say, is the educational component that we bring. I've been doing this for 21 years. And when I started in 1987, there was no such thing as an energy bar. I mean, if you were an endurance athlete, you had Gatorade. And maybe if you were like a really techie kind of runner guy, you might know about a product called Exceed. But that was it. And there was amino acid supplements and things like that for bodybuilders. And that was basically the nutritional landscape when we started. But we had triathletes that were now training three sports and training themselves into the ground. And they didn't understand why they were tired all the time, why they weren't recovering, why they were getting sick. We started developing products that would be effective at addressing the needs of a hard training athlete. And we had to educate those consumers. This is why you're feeling tired and sluggish all the time. This is why you're falling asleep at the office, because you're doing this high volume of aerobic training. You're causing a lot of free radical damage in the body, and you're not providing it with the micro and the macronutrients that it needs in a timely fashion in order to be able to recover from Monday's workout so that you could be effective in Tuesday's workout and so on down the line.
So I'm not a nutritionist. I'm not a dietitian. I don't even play one on TV. I went out. I bought books. They put me to sleep every single time. Tell me about that educational component. How are you educating athletes on ingesting the right stuff?
Well, I'm not a nutritionist either, and I definitely would like to make that clear. I've been in the trenches for 21 years. I was an elite athlete as growing up, playing water polo, swimming, racing motocross. And what we, the education that we offer is entirely consistent and congruent with accepted and proven theory on holistic diets, on whole foods, natural food diets, avoiding artificial colors and sweeteners and flavors whenever possible, avoiding excessive refined sugar, and so on. And we simply take that thinking, which, again, in the medical community, you won't find anybody arguing that a high sodium diet contributes to hypertension, heart disease, and a whole host of other maladies. And yet, in the athletic world right now, we hear a chorus of people saying, more sodium, eat more sodium, replace more sodium when you exercise. That's incongruent and completely inconsistent with proven research that shows that a low sodium diet actually allows for a healthier individual. So what we're saying is completely consistent with what the health community is saying about your normal daily diet. We're just applying that to the period of time before, during, and immediately after you exercise.
And so what resources do you provide to your customers to educate them in that way?
We have a wide variety of self-generated materials that are written by lay people and speak to lay people. So you mentioned earlier the books that put you to sleep. Now, keep in mind, Dr. Meisner, who's our research director, now retired emeritus, who wrote a 400-page book called Endurance Nutrition. And yeah, you're probably not going to get through that. But what we've done over the last 20 years is we've taken and distilled the science down to a very easy to comprehend and I would say not dry, not boring. This is stuff people read our Guide to Success or they read some of our shorter materials and they say, wow, this is exciting. This is interesting because light bulbs are going boom, boom, or flashing in their head. And like you, they're saying, oh, okay, I understand. Now I see why I cramped up in that race or why I have salt stains crusting my clothing when I'm done on riding on a hot day. So our resources are always free. We don't charge you for the education. If you want to buy the products, that's great, but you get the education for free. All of our resources are available as PDF downloads from our website at no charge, and they're included free of charge in any orders that we send to you.
So when I look at your display here, honestly, it's a little intimidating. You've got gels, you've got mixes, you've got capsules. How do I choose?
Well, David, it is true that we have one-stop shopping for athletes. We make everything from vitamin and mineral supplements to protein powders to recovery drinks, but that doesn't mean that you need to take all of these. And besides the education that we offer, we also have both online and live consultations where we will define who you are, what you're doing currently, what your goals are. And then from that, we'll recommend a prioritized list of products for you that you can go as far down the list as you want. You might want to just do a basic fuel, an electrolyte, and a vitamin supplement, and that's all. You may want to go further down the list. And in fact, we'll usually suggest that you start slow. Just start with one or two products because that's going to be a pretty big departure from what you've done habitually in the past. And get comfortable with those products. And again, spend some time getting a little bit more informed on how your body works and how you can take a complementary approach to fueling and hydration as opposed to a conflicting approach.
So while you say you're a one-stop shop, you wouldn't say that, you know, every product is a one-size-fits-all.
None of them are. In fact, I cringe at these, you know, dumbed-down before, during, and after type of formulas that are in fact, one-size-fits-all. And the thing that we constantly have to remind athletes is they're an individual. They have individualistic physiology. their stress level, their workload, I mean, the whole nine yards. And that contributes to what they are going to get the best results from a nutrition or a fueling standpoint. So, again, it's a risk we run of appearing to have a very complex and somewhat hard-to-understand product line. But when you couple the educational resources that we provide and the experts that we have on staff, pro triathletes, pro mountain bike racers, you know, ultra runners, you know, I mean, our head guy has done Race Across America 5 times. You know, he's the only person ever to do the Furnace Creek 508 back to back. And he spotted everybody 508 miles and still finished in the top 20 on the way back. Okay, I mean, we practice what we preach all day long.
Makes sense. Where can people get more information and where can they get these educational resources and consultations?
From our website, www.hammernutrition.com. You can also call our 800 number, 800-336-1977, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 Mountain Time, and speak to one of our experts if you prefer. Or on our website, we have Getting Started articles. We have the resource library. We have, you can just, you know, poke around on our website. No pressure. Kick the tires all you want. And again, whether you use our products or not, the information that we provide on proper fueling in terms of caloric intake, fluid intake, electrolyte intake, that will benefit you no matter whose products you use. And at the end of the day, I just would rather have you know that and do that so you can have more fun riding your bike. If you buy products from me, that's great too.
Brian, thanks so much.
Thanks for your time, David.
So as all of you know, a couple of weeks ago, I found myself in France on a guided cycling tour, and we were doing the French Alps. But, you know, there's some of you who may not necessarily want to go on the guided trip with people that you don't know. I'm talking to Jennifer Sage. Jennifer, what do you offer for them if they don't want to do the full guided stranger deal?
Well, I have a business called Viva Travels, but one segment of it is our self-guided service, which I actually call the Velo Concierge. So I act as a concierge. And we basically give our clients everything they need to know to do it on their own in total confidence. So we'll customize a tour. Let's take the Alps, for example. You know, you want to go to the Alps. We tell you where to ride, where not to ride, which is pretty important. You know, the best places to stay, but we work with you on what your choices or what your preference are. 3-star, 4-star, B&B, you know, whatever. And, you know, I've been there so many different times and in so many different parts of France and Italy that I make suggestions based on your riding ability, what your desires are. Do you want to do Mont Ventoux? Do you want to do Alpe d'Huez? Do you just want to do the Vineyards of Burgundy? Do you just want to, you know, ride a little and then relax a little? The other thing that we do is we really balance abilities. So maybe someone in your group doesn't want to ride as much. So every route has opportunities to make them longer or shorter. Someone can do just part of it and go back to the hotel and, you know, relax, and then everyone else can go out and do the longer part. So basically that's what we do. And we do it a little different than most of the other companies out there. I call it a hub and spoke system. So you stay longer in one area. You're not constantly moving. Most of my clients bring their own bikes, but we do have some rental possibilities over there. But you come over to, let's take France, for example. You come over to France, you bring your own bikes, we tell you how to pack them up, you get a car, you go to one area, you do all the rides in that area, and then you move to the next hub and do all the rides there. So the thing that differentiates us and that is special for, you know, cyclists out there who are pretty independent is that we give you options, choices, flexibility. You ride when you want, where you want, how you want, how much you want, how little you want, and you're not on someone else's schedule. And that's what's different.
So it sounds a little scary for some people, perhaps, because, oh my goodness, I'm going over to Europe and I'm going to be by myself. Let's first talk about the riding portion. You consult with them. You really design the rides for them. What do you give them to make sure that they don't get lost? What kind of cue sheets do you give them? How detailed does that get?
Well, it's almost as if I've guided tours for years and years and years. So this is the same information that we give our guided clients. It's almost as if you have a guide right there, but it's all in a bound handbook. And again, it's customized to you. So, you know, your information is in that handbook. And we describe every route, the difficulty, how long, how to add to it, where to eat. Because when you go to Europe, you have to plan your day around lunch. You know, it's not like in the States where you can just stop anywhere or throw a couple energy bars and you want to take advantage of the amazing food over there. So we make suggestions not only on the restaurants, but also the best picnic spots. You know, have a picnic underneath a 14th century chateau or, you know, a medieval village or along a riverside or something. So we tell you where to do that. We suggest how you plan your day. We might say, you know, here's the best ride to do on a Monday because there's a market in this, an outdoor market, a farmer's market somewhere in the town along the way. And those are really special experiences. So we give you every single thing you need to know. Location of bike shops, emergency information, safety information. We tell you how to drive over there. Most of my clients, I have to say, have already been there once. You know, so if you've been there on a guided tour or even just, you know, visited and you kind of get a taste of it, you kind of can see that it is possible to do it on your own. You just need to know where. You need to know what. And that's what we do, is give you that.
How'd you get started? Where'd you get the experience to do this?
Well, back in 1988, I did a self-supported, so with panniers, solo bike trip around Europe, mostly France, across Switzerland, into Germany and back into France. And while I was there, I ran into a bike tour. And this is, again, in the 80s. Everyone had helmets, so I knew they were Americans. The Europeans didn't wear helmets back then. And so I stopped to talk to the guide. I said, how do you do this? I want to do this. And she said, well, we're just getting bought out by another company. At the time, it was Vermont Country Cyclists. Some people might remember that. They were bought out by a company named Travent. And then the next year, I started working for Travent. And that was 1989. So I've been doing this for going on 20 years now. And, you know, go back almost every year. You know, I've led tours to the Tour de France. I did a tour with Greg LeMond one time, which was pretty cool. And I'm fluent in French. I've lived over there. I kind of know the ins and outs of the European cycling life, and I just really know France well and Italy well.
So for a self-guided tour, a customized self-guided, what's a plan that you're going to produce? What's that going to cost for the customer?
Well, if you were to go purchase a package for a self-guided tour, let's say an 8-day tour, depending on the hotel accommodations, it could cost you anywhere from $1,600 to $3,000 a person. And the way we do it, again, our clients get cars, but so without the vehicle rental, it costs less. We charge a per person, we call it the Velo Concierge fee, and then on top of that we add the accommodations that you want. So we give you choices. You know, it's not you have to stay at this hotel because that company decided they liked it best. We give you choices. And so I would say on average it's about $2,000 a person for an 8-day tour, which is pretty reasonable. You're saving thousands over a guided tour. Add your vehicle and your meals. Some meals are included in that, usually breakfast, maybe a couple dinners. And so it's really a very reasonable way to travel over there.
Where do people get more information? How do they contact you?
Well, Viva Travels is the company, so that's www.vivatravels.com. You can also call 866-804-VELO. And, you know, I would love to talk to anyone who might want to put something together for next year.
Great to meet you, and thanks for the info.
So nice to meet you, and this has been a great show.
Definitely the buzz this year at the show is on drivetrains, and especially no place more so than in the Campagnolo booth. And I'm here with Brian. We talked to Brian last year. He's just opened up this amazing case. It's like Christmas here, and we're looking at the new Super Record 11. So this one goes to 11. Let's talk about it, Brian.
All right. We have our new Ergo Power Shifters here that's designed around ergonomics. We have an increase of top surface space of 15%. On the bottom portion, where you usually put your two fingers when climbing in the hoods, we increase that so you could put three fingers underneath. We have a new double groove lever with a higher pivot design, makes it easier to brake from the hoods, and a lot more braking power from the drops. We also have a new groove channel section on the top hoods, makes it for a lot grippier surface. On the underneath of the hoods, there's air pockets that are sensitive to the different pressure points on your palms. Also, the way these grooves are, the wind would naturally channel away any sweat or moisture from the ErgoPower levers.
Tell me about those air pockets. Tell me what that's all about.
air pockets, especially if you're riding without any gloves, it gives it a lot softer feel on the top, so it's a lot more comfortable.
So for a longer ride, you're really going to feel more comfortable with these new levers.
Yes, especially when you ride without gloves. We also decreased it's a shorter reach from last year's levers. The majority of the public want a shorter reach or need a shorter reach. And then we have a shim kit that kicks out the whole body from the backside if you want a longer reach. The reason why we don't have any reach adjustments on the levers themselves is because that would affect any of the ergonomics that we designed the whole lever around. Yep. So these are the new ErgoPower shifters, Super Wrecker. Going to go move on to the front derailleur. Our new front derailleur has a new anodized back plate. That new anodization resists corrosion and flaking. On the inside of this carbon cage, there's also a steel plate, so the chain doesn't grind away against the carbon. Our front derailleurs are both compact and standard compatible, so it's one front derailleur for two different types of cranksets. On the back side, we have wider pivots. Wider pivots means it's a lot stiffer front derailleur. It's also coming in clamp sizes of Brazon, 32-millimeter clamp, and 35. We have the new Super Wrecker 11-speed rear derailleur. If you guys can see this, it's a lot wider pivot, a lot bigger carbon cage plate, increases torsional stiffness by 150%, which is quite a lot from last year's. On the backside, we're going with 11-tooth pulley wheels, both longer and equal wear. The pulley wheels are now hollow to save weight. And we're also using ceramic bearings.
Now, I picked one of these up, and it number one, because you can't see this, as always, this is Campagnolo. It looks like a piece of bike jewelry, number one. But number two, I picked it up, and it was like a feather. What is this weigh?
I don't have the specific numbers, but it is a very light rear derailleur. And going back to the jewelry aspect, you know, if you're going to spend that much money, it has to look good. I mean, this is Italian stuff. They're all about the fashion. One last thing I forgot to mention on the rear derailleur is a special rubberized coating on the pulley wheels that absorb chain vibration, especially from the bottom portion of the chain.
Now, what about, depending on the size of your cassette, your largest, your smallest cog, do you have different length cages?
Not this year. With the introduction of the 11-speed and some new gear ranges, we actually just have one cage length rear derailleur.
So you've just grabbed a cassette. We'll talk about gear ranges as we go through this.
Yes, definitely. So we have the new 11-speed cassette Super Record. It has six titanium cogs and is now coming with an aluminum lock ring. One of the profiles of the teeth coming down the line is shaved like a shark's fin. That's where the shifting actually takes place. The reason why it's ground down like that is for faster and smoother shifting. We're now housing at 3 rings per carrier versus last year's 2 rings per carrier, increasing the bending stiffness by 70%. Also on the backside, the rings are now being drilled down to the free hub body. Last year, our rings used to sit on a carrier. The carrier would be the driving force. Now that they're keyed down all the way to the free hub body, increased torsional stiffness by 180%. So it's quite a bit.
And gear ranges again?
Gear ranges, they have 1123, 1125, 1225, and a new gear range of 1227.
So when you go to climb the Alpe d'Huez, go for the 1227.
There you go. Also, one last feature about these rings. Misconception that people have out there is that these thickness of the cassette rings are thinner. They're not. They're the same thickness as last year's cassette rings. All they did was move all the spacing closer together, which brings us over to the chain.
I knew you were going to say that. All right, so now we're going to look at the chain. So we're talking now about a narrower chain than last year.
Yes. The chain now goes from a 5.9-millimeter width to a 5.5-millimeter width. What they did is they took last year's record chain and shaved the outside links. Now, that means the plates are thinner because, once again, the internal diameter for the cassette body or the cassette is the same thickness. So it goes from a 5.9 to a 5.5, and they shaved out the outside. Now, of course, that's going to compromise the strength of the chain. So what they've done is they use a higher-grade steel, and the chain is now 20% stronger.
So, thinner, yet stronger, and then what about the overall weight? Are we saving weight there as well?
The material is a little bit more dense, so it's pretty much in the same ballpark.
So we're able to get the 11 speeds in the thinner, in the narrower chain, and we're not really compromising anything, except we're gaining strength.
Correct.
Nice.
That's it. Last thing to talk about is our new Super Record crank sets. The exact same crank arms as last year's Record. So you're going with a hollow carbon crank with the Ultra Torque technology. What makes this Super Record is we have new specific 11-speed rings. They're new hard anodized finish, resist corrosion and flaking. They also last 3 times longer than last year's Record ring. So the wear that you see at 3,000 kilometers on this is the same wear that you see at 1,000 kilometers on last year's 2008 Record rings. With the new finish on here, it's a lot smoother, so you're going to get a lot smoother shifts. Also, there's a lot more shifting ramps, so it's faster shifts. Going on to the main thing that we have about the crankset, it's called Colt Technology Bearings. This is a ceramic bearing system, not just ceramic balls. A lot of people these days are upgrading to ceramics, and they don't understand that not only you have to have special races that complement the ceramic ball bearings. So a lot of people are pitting out their races. Campanella says we got to build a system together, kind of like when they term the word group set. So what they're doing is they're building special races made out of Chronotech material that's proprietary to them. Ceramic ball bearings, once again, they're making the ceramic ball bearings. And the system is so superior that you don't have to run any oil or grease in them. You could run them dry if you want. Personally, for me, I like using a little drop of oil. It drives me crazy if something's dry in there. So, yeah.
Now, what about the brakes for this year?
The brakes this year, they're still the same skeleton brakes, just titanium hardware on the Super Record. But nothing's changed on that.
So somebody wants to go out, they want to pick up Super Record 11 to outfit their entire bike. Got a MSRP in mind?
Right now, unquoted, I don't have the MSRP list on me, but it's about $3,600. But, you know, when you're building a premium bike, it makes sense that you're going to put premium parts on there.
Now, 11-speed is available Super Record, Record, and Chorus, right?
Correct. They're Chorus, Record, and Super Record, all 11-speed and all cross-compatibility within the 11-speed range. So you can use a Chorus cassette and Super Record levers or vice versa.
So, Brian, you know, there's that old movie. This is Spinal Tap. And in Spinal Tap, their machines go to 11. And everybody always asks them, you know, why do you turn it up? And the guy says, because it goes to 11. The question you're probably getting the most is, why is Campy now going to 11?
Well, let's talk about racing for a little bit, and then you could understand why we went to 11 speed. These days, we're watching professional races, and people are losing by milliseconds. And it's not just one race or two races. It's like almost every race, you're watching five or six guys ride up to the line, and of course, there's only one winner. Other companies spend money on technology, how fast, you know, how tires, spend millions on clothing and how wind resistance. So Campanella says, well, let's invest in how we make our stuff shift faster. Especially in the sprint, you're constantly shifting. So if we can make our stuff shift faster, then I think we're onto something. Naturally, what they've done, they looked at frictions against the chain. They looked at how far our shifters throw. You know, a farther throw means more time it takes to throw the lever. One thing they did also was they took our 10-speed cassette and moved the cassette rings closer together because naturally it's less time for the rear derailleur to travel. After everything's said and done, they were happy with the results. The only problem is now they have a spacer on the back of the cassette filling in this gap because they put the cassette rings closer together. And they say, look, we could put another gear back here if we wanted to. Right now it's just a spacer. So the common question I ask people is like, if you're at that point, what would you do? Would you introduce it? And most people say, well, why not? And what the Campanella refers to is 11-speed. There's two sayings, why not, or it's just the icing on the cake. In the U.S., we'd say it's the cherry on top of the sundae.
And with some 10-speed ranges, depending on what range you choose, a lot of times there's a gap in there. You know, that you've got, maybe you jump from a 15 to a 17, and some people might want the 16. The nice thing about the 11 is you're able to eliminate more of those gaps, aren't you?
Correct. One thing that was mostly requested by pros, because that's who we work with most, is the 18-tooth cog. Mm. All our ranges always miss that 18-tooth cog. It was jumping from a 17 to a 19, and they introduced that 18-tooth cog, mostly requested by the pros. So that was the pros' request, not a Campanella saying that you need this gear.
So now that you've got the space, because you narrowed everything up, you can add that gear make the pros happy, and I mean Super Record's about racing, right?
Right. That's what we're all about, is racing. And once again, we narrowed up the spacing in between the rings, and the cassette rings actually stay the same thickness as our 10-speed rings.
Brian, thanks again. It's always great to hear about Campy in 2009.
Thank you very much.